The headline reads, Lady Gaga went full-on Shakespeare in Alexander McQueen at the London premiere of A Star Is Born. Christopher Rosa writes, the pop singer slash actress wore an Alexander McQueen gown, not just any gown, but a ruffled gilded one from the brand's fall 2013 collection that's giving off major Shakespearean vibes. A midsummer but really early fall night's dream indeed. We know Lady G loves a theme. She channeled a 50s Italian actress at the Venice Film Festival earlier this summer, wore a patriotic get-up to sing the national anthem in 2016, and now looks like the chicest extra in a UK Shakespearean production ever. That from Glamour.com, September 2018. But can we say Shakespeare and Lady Gaga in the same sentence with any deeper resonance? Dr. Sarah Olive is lecturer in English in education at the University of York in the UK, and she contends there are good reasons for pairing texts by and about these giants of popular entertainment from the 16th and 21st centuries to offer ways of reading Shakespeare freshly. Such couplings draw on and value a wide range of literacies, she says, textual, musical, and visual. These are literacies which students willingly engage with on a daily basis, which acknowledge that students have existing media knowledge and skills which should be accessed and given expression within their education. Dr. Olive also suggests that finding continuities between Shakespeare and Gaga's themes and craftsmanship decreases perceptions of Shakespeare's remoteness. It allows for an acknowledgement of the ways in which they are similar and dissimilar, rooted in media and social conventions, as well as creative traditions particular to their time. For example, changing taboos around female sexuality and behavior. Gaga has been praised for the way in which she examines the female condition, disrupting and disturbing stereotypes and pressures upon young women concerning normative expectations and values. In such a pairing, students could consider whether this is also true of Shakespeare and Shakespearean texts, exploring women playing with gender in As You Like It and Twelfth Night. Such comparative readings enable students to think about the way in which traditions originating in the English literary tradition continue to influence writers, artists, and cultural producers working in other countries and other times, as well as the ways in which these times and places write back to earlier eras. And ultimately, Dr. Olive believes it is a juxtaposition that should allow students to feel empowered by appreciating and using their popular cultural literacy, but which simultaneously asks them to use this knowledge to develop critical skills. It is both provocative and productive, appealing to students' own interests in taboos, boundaries, subversion, and activism in a way that is also socially responsible, given, for example, that Gaga has directly campaigned against bullying and intolerance. Words of Dr. Sarah Olive of the University of York in the UK, who brings Shakespeare and Lady Gaga together in her teaching. She mentions that Twelfth Night is one of her go-to plays, and she writes in a very formal way to her academic colleagues about bringing Shakespeare to life for their young students in this way. We can never forget that Shakespeare and Lady Gaga know the power of theater and the theatrical and how to entertain. They will meet at the Oppenheim Center for the Arts in Scranton this weekend as Rev Theater Company returns to United Neighborhood Centers in Scranton to present a production of Shakespeare's comedy, Twelfth Night. 20 teens and middle school students have been working intensively with Rev Theater Company, which is based in New York and Philadelphia, to prepare for this production. Shakespeare's beloved play will be presented in a contemporary, exuberant, and ebullient production for all ages. Twelfth Night is Rev Theater Company's and United Neighborhood Center's seventh Shakespeare program collaboration and production, The program is led by Rev's artistic directors, Rudy Caparazzo and Rosie Hay, each steeped in the performing and teaching of Shakespeare. Rosie, for example, was assistant director for Trevor Nunn at the Royal Shakespeare Company for his productions of Romeo and Juliet and The Winter's Tale. Rosie and Rudy stopped in at the WVIA studios to talk with us about Twelfth Night and the UNC production.
It's about the island of Illyria, which is a kingdom that Shakespeare made up. And there is a shipwrecked young woman whose brother, she thinks, has drowned. She disguises herself as a boy and goes and works for Duke Orsino. And she falls in love with the Duke, but the Duke is in love with the Countess Olivia. And the Countess Olivia falls in love with Viola, who is disguised as the boy Cesario. So that's one of the main
There's
threads.
There's a lot of gender issues
yes.
in it.
Gender bending
is
and
really
fluidity.
Fascinating, particularly in today's world. I mean, it's always been a fascinating play, and it's always been one of Shakespeare's most beloved comedies. But there's a lot of resonance in terms of stuff that kids might be thinking about or even very specifically dealing with in their own lives or may know someone else who is.
And there are many other facets to it. There are wonderful characters. Each character is beautifully delineated by Shakespeare, and there's an enormous amount of comedy and high spirits and lots of opportunity for music, because the first line is, "If music be the food of love, play on." So the characters love music. There will be a lot of music, of course, courtesy of Rudy. So it's going to be an extraordinarily uplifting show. We've done a lot of tragedies. We decided it was time now.
Yeah.
Especially in these times.
The world can use it. So it's our small but heartfelt contribution to it. And it's a kind of, we're approaching the holiday specifically, but it's all very Valentine-centric in a lot of ways. And I like to think of it in a way that is hopefully not too self-aggrandizing by saying this, but our Valentine to Scranton.
You always say it's not, well, we do Philadelphia and we do New York and then we come to Scranton.
I have long, as I've said to you before, long-standing, deep, deep-rooted ties to the community because I was, for all intents and purposes, born and raised here. Both my parents are from the area and my grandmother lived here for many, many, many years. But no, it's not like that for me. We both have come to love Scranton. For Rosie, it's more newly minted than mine. Mine is, you know, for many years now. But I don't think that there's a need or reason to even compare those places, because each of those places in their own very special and unique way has something to offer to the experience. And we are busy people. And we do have many things to do. And we do many things in many places, including what can only be called professional adult productions. But Scranton and working at UNC and with these kids in an ongoing way is a highlight of my year for me. And I mean that.
It's really important. And we have a big, big cast, but we have so many returnees. I don't even know how many, at least 10, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, kids who've come. The young woman she's now 17, and she's playing Viola. She's been with us since she was 11, almost 12. Let's talk about Miranda and Bree.
Miranda sent us a message a few days ago because the first production we ever did with these kids was 6 years ago, and it was a production of Macbeth. So on the anniversary of the performance date of that, Miranda sent us the most beautiful, heartfelt text reminding us. I mean, I didn't remember what the exact date of it was. It's always this time of year-ish. So she sent us a text telling us how much the experience means in an ongoing way, once again, to her. And she talked about how she was so glad that we dragged her kicking and screaming into it, which we did. I did, certainly.
She's graduated from the program, and so has our other production assistant, Bree. But we rope them in, and they come so willingly, and they are just invaluable. They are the best.
Once they turn 18, they're not technically part of the agency, so they cannot be, in a performance-based way anyway, program participants, but they've chosen to stick around and help in a, you know, for lack of a better way of putting it, behind-the-scenes kind of way or ways.
We all can imagine what kinds of things these young people take away from an experience like this. Self-confidence, what other kinds of things?
An ability to problem solve, because, you know, it's just like the professional actor thing. It's not magical. Everyone gets together and holds hands and sings Kumbaya and roasts marshmallows and makes s'mores. I mean, there's personality conflicts. There's different styles of thinking about things and thus dealing with each other as a member of humanity, learning not only self-respect, but respect for others in terms of having an opening for allowing other people to express their opinions, their ideas, their ideals, and come together and make something happen as a unit. And that's a huge life skill, I think. I mean, I'm still learning that myself in terms of being in a rehearsal room with people, because everybody's issues just come out.
And Rosie, we always turn to you to talk about the language, Shakespeare, young people, and language.
It's an edited version. It always is. It's running probably, you know, a little over an hour, but there's not one word that isn't Shakespeare's. And we go through and make sure that everyone knows exactly what they're saying and how
they're going to... That's painstaking and kind of tedious for everyone involved. But, I mean, as an actor myself, the only sin or crime that I think I can commit, well, aside from possibly being boring, because for me that's the worst thing on the planet, but is not to know what I'm saying, because then you have no right, let alone reason, to try and be translating a thought when you don't really know what the thought is.
So we spend time on that. We spend time on really reaching out to the language and making it live. And the kids really respond. I mean, I think they enjoy it. They see, well, they're back. They come back and new ones join. So I think it's a process that is very rewarding for them.
And Shakespeare's language is so musical. What kinds of music will be?
Well, you know, I always pull out Lady Gaga. She seems to have a particular resonance for me. So, I mean, I hope that people listening will come, and I hope I'm not going to kill anyone's surprise buzz or maybe we should issue a spoiler alert here. But there is a Lady Gaga song in it. There's a Robert Palmer song. It might be Addicted to Love, because that's what all these characters are. Many of them are in love with the idea of being in love. So that song, I think, speaks very specifically to that. So these are just, I mean, also Izzy, who's a returnee as well, she's playing Feste, and Festa has a great deal of the musical responsibility in the piece overall. So she at one point sings Stuck in the Middle with You. She sings a Hall & Oates song. It's probably Maneater. So there's a lot of songs that are thematically connected, that have a real reason for being in the piece, that are not Hey Nani, No Nani in Rev's production with United Neighborhood Centers, at least this time out.
And I think it helps the cast connect with the play, the world of the play, because they're hearing pop songs that they know, they all know Lady Gaga, but even if they're older songs, many of them have heard of them.
And we've created a world, or at least we're attempting to create a world that is anarchic.
Crazy.
It really is anarchic. Crazy, madcap, zany. It's anachronistic. There's no one is wearing tights, and no one is wearing, you know, a lace-up bodice. That's not what we're doing. So the characters are going to be dressed to really reflect or be indicative of who they are in the piece, not who they are in a period piece. So all of it works in a way that is just a cohesive vision, and not only of us, because the kids are bringing in a lot of their own ideas about who their characters are and how they think they behave and what they might have or use in a prop-based way. So that's really imagination at its best, and that's really an exciting part of the process too, to have these kids have that kind of a stake in what they're doing.
I can imagine that a Shakespeare production would be anything but boring, that there would be physicality,
beautiful clothes, very little scenery.
It's supposed to be a little bit indicative of, and this is sort of a downer as a reference, but after a horrible flood, hurricane, disastrous storm, it's a little Katrina debris-ish, if that makes sense. There's a lot of stuff hanging around and going on in that way. So that is definitely a part of it, because it is about these people's lives being shipwrecked, and out of this tremendous chaos and disorder comes a new order. So that's really important too.
Any ladders?
There is a ladder. It's become a trademark. I know. I mean, the kids, it's become an ongoing joke with the kids. They say if it's a Rev production, there's got to be a ladder. And it's become the candy stripe ladder that appeared in a kid's show for the first time years ago. So it's sort of become the mascot in a weird kind of way. So yeah, there's a ladder and it's given a workout in this, Erica, believe me. It's used for a lot of things, mm-hmm. including a lot of fumbled romantic and advances encounters and an element as an obstacle in a sword fight. So it's doing a lot of quadruple, maybe even five time duties in this thing.
Rudy, you are so agile and you are so committed to the physicality of theater. What about that part of his production?
The real challenge for me is helping these kids to understand, as we talked earlier, about gender and how we move differently, whether that's been societally imposed or whether that just comes as a part from a sort of genetic base or chromosomal base, biological base, I guess is the best word. So the girls who are playing, because Orsino happens to be a girl to begin with, so she's playing a boy, but then Viola, who is a girl as a performer, is playing a boy in the piece. So it's interesting to find ways to telegraph, for lack of a better word, mm-hmm. masculinity, but have it actually be, it's a very difficult thing to do as an actor because it's multi-layered. So it's very complicated. And that's proving a challenge, not only for the girls, but for me as well, to help them with that.
Do they then talk to you about gender issues today? And does it get to that level, or do they just keep it inside or talk with themselves at break?
I think that because there's become a certain level of trust with us, that they are more outspoken and freer with their thoughts and feelings and inclinations than they might be with other people. But we don't encourage that in that direction because they are incredibly personally involved with us, and we have to be clear about where boundaries are because they're very impressionable young people and they're beautiful souls, they are. And it's hard for me sometimes to just pull back and say, you know, this has to go in the inappropriate column. It really does. It has to be, you need to talk to somebody else about this stuff. So that does happen on occasion. It does.
And parents and friends. And we say, you know, it's about the work. So we try and keep, it's not lack of caring. It's because we just know that there need to be those very.
It is not therapy. So it's not used that way ever.
Dance?
There's going to be a lot of movement that will be indicative of everyone having a good time. It's a good time piece. It is.
There have been things you've said about it that suggest that the themes Shakespeare's exploring can speak to us today, that they're perennial themes.
Shakespeare always does speak to us. Whatever the play, there will be something that resonates. Not just his humanity, which I think is the huge thing that we all respond to 450 years later is the great humanity of this man. But questions about what is love? What does it mean? Is it, how do you differentiate between maybe love at first sight, which may not be real, and in some cases it's not in this play, and love which comes from true knowing of someone? So those kind of questions are always with us.
And
always.
For me, the play is so steeped in a sense of loss. The character of Olivia spends a great deal of the play. She certainly begins it in a state of mourning because of the death of her brother. And Viola believes that her brother has been lost at sea too. So they are, the two women are twinned in that way emotionally. But the idea of someone, not literally in this case, but she thinks he's dead. He's not dead. They are reunited at the end. That reconciliation is
profound.
Yeah, yeah. It never fails to get me where I live. It's just so incredibly uplifting and beautiful what Shakespeare has written in that way. When they discover that they both still exist.
He was very attuned to his sister, Shakespeare, Judith. And it's so profound. It's so interesting in the play that when they reunite in the very last scene, from that moment, it's almost the end of the play, but not quite, that neither of them, Viola or Sebastian, speak, because I think they're dealing with each other. They don't speak anymore.
Yeah, we've done a couple of productions of The Comedy of Errors, and I've played the slave twins, and I've played both twins, and we have to have a double at the very end. And it's so profound, that sense of finding that part of yourself.
Yeah. Big stuff in Shakespeare, always.
And I will say, once again, in typical Rev fashion, Viola and Sebastian are meant to be spitting image identical twins. I mean, everyone in the play takes Viola for Sebastian. Olivia takes Viola for Sebastian and Sebastian for Viola at the very end. She actually marries Sebastian when she thinks it's actually all along been Cesario, i.e. Viola. And everyone at the end is confused by all of this. But we we've deliberately chosen two kids that couldn't possibly actually look less alike.
We
because
suspend
it's colorblind
our, yes.
And it's just anything goes.
Yeah, and we suspend our disbelief.
And they have fun with that probably,
yeah.
Don't they? Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's important that everyone knows that it's totally inclusive.
We have fun with it. Yeah. By me saying, oh, it's Kayla. For a moment there, I thought it was Shaheem.
Do you suppose that they live these characters and these lines after they leave at home in the shower? Or?
Oh, yes, I think.
Yeah, and it's not to trump Shakespeare in any way, but to answer your question, I know they sing the songs because the songs are sung all the time because the songs are earworms.
They do. They work hard. They work after hours.
And they repeat lines. I mean, lines that they find amusing or that have been difficult for them to learn or that sound particularly strange to the ear.
Yeah.
They go around saying those.
It's cool.
Yes.
I've said it before and I'll say it again. These kids are in it to win it. They want to do it to the best of their level, and they're so completely invested and committed and responsible to each other, to themselves, and conjunctively, in a conjoined way, rather, to the piece and the process of
every
doing the piece.
Every night, 4 to 8, Saturdays all day, there they are.
Yeah, we make sure they get their homework done first, or they do it in shifts based on who we need in scenes while we're simultaneously working, and they are there to get the job done. They want to do this.
If we come to see you and see them, see this production, we'll come away with experience of Shakespeare.
I think it's unique, and I can completely put that onto the kids and the agency, who is ongoingly, singularly understanding and committed to why this is important and why we should come back again. I also need to say the project this year is being funded in a completely different way than it has been so far. It's being entirely funded by the private sector, for lack of a way to putting it, among others, people who have become our dear, dear friends and completely committed supporters of what we do by virtue of believing in us and our vision. Sandra and Maury Myers are leading the pack in terms of their kindness and their profound commitment to bringing us back to United Neighborhood Centers this year with this production of Twelfth Night. Thank you, Sandra and Maury.
And this particular visit, we are fortunate, Rudy and I, to be hosted at the University of Scranton, and we are so grateful.
It feels like there is a very strong and growing sense of community for us here, and that's super important for what we do and how we like to think that we do it. I hope that we do.
Well, then, where and when?
Twelfth Night is being done free to the public. It is
free.
It is not just our gift or our Valentine to the community. It's everybody who's involved and completely, singularly committed to Rev's work here in Scranton with UNC in this way. At the Oppenheim Center for the Arts, which is on Jackson Street. What is it?
It's 1004 Jackson Street on the west side.
Rudy Caparazzo and Rosie Hay, artistic directors of Rev Theatre Company, speaking with us about their partnership of 7+ years with United Neighborhood Centers, producing Shakespeare with teens and middle school students in Scranton. They will present Twelfth Night by Shakespeare with a little bit of Lady Gaga thrown in to help make the connection between the students and Shakespeare. And the comedy has been scheduled for Friday, February 1st at 6 p.m. The word from Rosie is, UNC has asked us to have Saturday, February 2nd as an alternative to the scheduled Friday performance. As the weather looks to be bitterly cold on Friday, there is concern about audience turnout. So, Saturday, February 2nd at 6 p.m. at the Oppenheim Center for the Arts, 1004 Jackson Street in Scranton. Admission is free. For more information online, uncnepa.org, uncnepa.org. That's Rev Theater Company presenting Twelfth Night, and it is with young people from United Neighborhood Centers of Northeastern Pennsylvania. The production is Twelfth Night by Shakespeare. Admission is free. It is at the Oppenheim Center for the Arts at 1004 Jackson Street in Scranton, uncnepa.org. And again, here's the note from Rosie. UNC has asked us to have Saturday, February 2nd, as an alternative to the scheduled Friday performance. The weather looks to be bitterly cold on Friday, and there is concern about audience turnout. So, Saturday, February 2nd at 6 p.m. If you need to call, you should call the UNC folks in Scranton at area code 570-346-0759, 346-0759.